This is a love letter to my first home in Africa, as I pack up, lock up, and slam shut the steel gate for the last time. When I first moved into Newtown, Johannesburg, people either said I was brave or mad. The majority of middle-class expats congregate in the city's northern suburbs, living between an English-style house and garden, European-style cafe, and American-style shopping mall. Why did I have to be different? Newtown appealed to me as the city's self-declared cultural precinct. It has a bookshop, dance space, galleries, jazz club, street market, nightclubs, restaurants, theatres, and museums on everything from African culture to science to beer. It also bears the scars of history and, like a good character actor, has an interesting face. I lived in what was known as the Coolie location when it was an inner-city slum of thousands of working-class blacks and Indians. An outbreak of bubonic plague in 1904 gave the authorities the excuse they sought for a kind of ethnic cleansing, so the fire brigade razed it to the ground. A new town rose from the ashes based around a fruit and veg market, mill, abattoir, and power station. This was a hotbed of political activism. In 1908, Mahatma Gandhi led a non-violent march to the local Hamidiya Mosque, where hundreds of Indians threw their registration cards on a bonfire as part of his passive resistance campaign. The heart of Newtown is named Mary Fitzgerald Square, after a fierce trade unionist, and was originally a wagon site and rallying point for strikers, a tradition that I saw continue earlier this year. Overlooking the square is the quaintly charming Museum Africa, which began life as a vast market built in 1913 with British steel arcing 200 metres high. At one end is the Market Theatre, a talisman of anti-apartheid protest and one of the most atmospheric performance venues in the world. Beside it is Kramadolos, an equally colourful, exotic African restaurant that claims the Queen, Nelson Mandela and Elton John among its former patrons. But Newtown is not a place for quiet contemplation. The Islamic call to prayer floats over rooftops from the Hamidiya Mosque into my home street. If I followed its siren song, I was in Fordsburg, where the faces are brown instead of black, and the popular hangouts are Indian restaurants and the Oriental Plaza shopping centre. From my flat, I could sometimes hear, at 2 in the morning, the sound of 80s hits from a nightclub in competition, rather more unexpectedly, with the raucous hallelujahs of a Pentecostal church in an anonymous-looking whitewashed building. One afternoon, I heard the thunder of a not-so-distant explosion, a cash transit van being blown up and a security guard killed. It would be fair to say my neighbourhood was rough around the edges. Once, in Mary Fitzgerald Square, I saw a man urinating on the outside wall of a public urinal. Apparently walking inside was too much trouble. Another time, as I headed home, a policeman in his car stared at me and waved his hands frantically, apparently taking me for a naive tourist who'd wandered off the beaten track into a danger zone. A fellow British journalist came to see me and said he felt like Sherman McCoy taking a wrong turning in the bonfire of the vanities. After a mugger threatened to shoot me for my mobile phone, I had to admit that I'd possibly chosen to live in a version of pre-Giuliani New York. Newtown is the focus of an urban renewal project, but gentrification is a treacherous road. An upmarket Italian restaurant chain, Doppio Zero, opened a Newtown branch with fanfare, but appeared to silently close it a few months later. The £10 million Nelson Mandela Bridge is a gleaming symbol of city pride, but beneath its soaring arch is a trash-strewn wasteland with people sleeping rough and mock graves made from stones and crosses that proclaim Jesus versus Zuma and politics has killed many, but no one is raised up. Why? In theory, my streetwise New Yorker girlfriend, aka Dreadlocks, approved my choice of home as something more adventurous, authentic and African than cosy expatbia. That is, until she saw it. To go for dinner, we had to step over piles of rubble, cracked paving slabs and broken bottles to reach a street where the lighting no longer worked. As we picked our way through the dark, taking care to avoid the dozen or so homeless men under cardboard sheets, Dreadlocks was going rather cold on authentic living. And I had to admit, if you think this is bad, you should see the street around the corner. Car Street consists of fences topped by coils of barbed wire, running between shells of buildings that have the bombed-out, ruined look of France after the Second World War. One such structure, opposite a funeral parlour, is home for desperate people crammed in behind its broken window panes. Idle youths eyed me sullenly and suspiciously. Newtown, I had to admit, can be a frightening place. Dreadlocks decided enough was enough, and so we're moving out to somewhere, if not exactly suburban, then certainly more leafy and close to South Africa's equivalent of Marks and Spencer. But as I said my farewells, Newtown revealed the heart beating beneath its scabrous chest. At the Market Theatre, a thrilling South African play, foreplay, pushing the boundaries of taste and decency before a rapt audience. On a sunny Sunday afternoon, a breathtaking modern dance rendition of Carmen at the Dance Factory. At Museum Africa, the World Summit on Arts and Culture, bringing 450 delegates from 70 countries and a big city cosmopolitan buzz. And then one day I wandered into a school show that combined actors and musicians to tell the history of jazz in South Africa. It was delightful, sorrowful, unforgettable. At the end, a group of middle-aged women in traditional African costumes and head wraps were invited down from the audience to join in the exuberant dance. They did so with the smiling grace and dignity of age, swaying slowly but regally to the music. And at that moment, as I watched the weathered serenity on their faces, I think I fell in love with South Africa.